Hi, I'll just have to warn everybody, so I have a few unappetizing pictures in my talk. So this is perfect timing, considering this is the last talk right before lunch. So this is a polyclonal salmonella outbreak associated with an Ecuadorian cultural festival. So on August 13th in 2013, a local hospital called to report 9 patients who had attended an Ecuadorian cultural festival on August 11th in Minneapolis. Our case definition was a festival attendee who developed vomiting and or diarrhea defined as 3 or more loose stools after the event. Stool specimens were cultured for bacterial pathogens at the Minnesota Department of Health Laboratory, and also the clinical laboratory tested specimens with the Luminex X-TAG Gastrointestinal Pathogen Panel, or X-TAG GPP. The hospital provided contact information for patients seen in the emergency room, and festival attendees were interviewed about food consumption and illness history. An environmental health assessment was conducted, and leftover foods were tested by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, or MDA. So 119, or 94%, of the 127 interviewed festival attendees met the case definition. The median age was 28 years, with a range of 1 to 49 years, and 52% were female. The median incubation period was 20 hours, with a range of 8.5 to 96 hours. And 89 or 75% of cases were seen in an urgent care or emergency room, and 11 or 9% were hospitalized. So we ended up with 40 laboratory-confirmed salmonella infections, and 5 serotypes and 9 distinct PFG patterns were identified. There were 2 PFG patterns of Salmonella typhimurium, 2 PFG patterns of Salmonella 4512I-, 3 PFG patterns of Salmonella Uganda, I got some timings on here, and 1 PFG pattern of Salmonella Chalei and Salmonella infantis each. So at the clinical laboratory, there were 29 specimens tested with the X-TAG GPP, and 18 or 62% were positive for Salmonella by both X-TAG GPP and culture. 4 were positive for Salmonella by X-TAG GPP that were negative by culture, and 7 were negative for Salmonella by X-TAG GPP that were positive by culture. Interestingly, 6 of these were the same serotype, 4512I-. So there were 10 vendors at the festival, and 61% of cases reported eating food from one specific vendor. The remaining cases either couldn't recall which vendor they ate from or reported eating foods from multiple vendors. And this implicated vendor served roasted pork, guinea pig, pork tripe stuffed with vegetables, rice, potatoes, boiled corn, and ceviche. So we were actually unable to conduct a case control study due to the limited number of non-ill controls. And it wasn't for lack of effort. Obviously we were hearing about cases through the emergency room, so kind of those people were obviously ill. We were trying to get family members, asking if they knew other people in the community that were not sick. But basically everybody we talked to who ate from this vendor was sick. So we just had some food consumption frequencies instead. 94 or 79% ate pork, 85 or 71% ate rice, 82 or 69% ate potatoes, and 77 or 65% ate boiled corn, 45 or 38% ate the guinea pig, and 8 or 7% ate the tripe. So MDA tested the leftover foods that we were able to collect, and 6 salmonella serotypes and 7 PFG patterns were isolated from the foods. Cooked guinea pig, rice, potatoes, and corn all tested positive, but unfortunately there was no leftover pork or tripe available for testing. So they also tested uncooked imported guinea pig collected from a distributor, and then also took environmental samples, namely guinea pig feces and bedding from a breeder, were also collected, and all of those samples were negative for salmonella. So maybe some evidence that guinea pigs weren't the initial source of contamination. So for those guinea pigs, there were 2 sources. She purchased a few that were frozen and imported from Ecuador. And then she also went out to a breeder in Minnesota and purchased guinea pigs. And there was a little bit of a language barrier between the two of them. He claimed he didn't know these were going to be made into food. And he's actually someone who shows guinea pigs, so I think he was lying to me. But he did say he had a little bit of a suspicion, looking back on it, because she was picking out kind of the older, fatter guinea pigs as the ones she wanted to buy. So after she brought those guinea pigs back, she butchered them and partially eviscerated them in the back of a grocery store that was owned by a family member. They were then marinated for at least a day in a walk-in cooler and then cooked on a rotisserie at the festival. So here's a picture of the frozen imported guinea pig that we got from a distributor. The nice cute picture on the label. A little less cute outside of the packaging. Kind of reminded me of science class. And then I'll just mention, the back of the label had this great labeling. Guinea pig meat has zero cholesterol. It's highly nutritious, easily digestible. It contains these two types of acids that cannot be found in other meats and are essential for human consumption. These natural substances are very important for the development and growth of brain neurons and cell membranes. So I don't know how accurate that is, but apparently, guinea pigs make you very smart. And here are some leftover guinea pigs that we collected for testing. These were actually the ones purchased from the breeder. And you can see that in that top guinea pig, you can kind of see in the body cavity a little bit there, and you can see that it is partially eviscerated, so there is some internal organs still present. The ceviche consisted of pre-cooked shrimp, cilantro, tomatoes, red onion, ketchup, and lemon juice. This was also prepared at the grocery store. And then the rice, corn, and potatoes were all prepared on site at the festival and hot held in a steam warmer. So here's an image of the ceviche ingredients on the left, some rice and corn that are intermixed in the middle, and just the corn on the right that were tested by MDA. So the pork consisted of three 80-pound pigs purchased fully cooked at a local grocery market the day of the festival. The market deboned and cooked the pigs in walk-in ovens, and then they were hot held on a grill at the festival, according to the vendor, and the pigs were from a producer in Glencoe, Minnesota. So they actually did an environmental health assessment at this grocery or market and didn't find any issues with their preparation practices. The pork tripe was stuffed with cabbage, cooked potatoes, carrots, rice, green onions, and peas, and was also prepared in the back of the grocery. Interestingly, the vendor refused to provide the source of the tripe. It wasn't collected on the initial conversations when she was more cooperative, and then by the time we were asking specifically about it, she refused. So the vendor did have a permit for the festival, but foods listed on the vendor application were different from the foods that were actually served. And they noted a number of critical violations, the first being that live guinea pigs were obtained from an unlicensed supplier, slaughtered in an area that was not a slaughterhouse and where live animals are not permitted. The cooking of food items took place in an unapproved, unlicensed area. The pork was not from an approved wholesaler, so she should not have been reselling that food item at the festival. She didn't take any temperature logs throughout the cooking process to assess adequate cooking temperatures, and then took no food temperatures at the event to ensure that she was maintaining proper hot holding or cold holding. So she ended up getting a $1,000 fine by the environmental health investigators, and that grocery store where she prepared a lot of the foods was closed. So this was a really challenging environmental health investigation. They had to really rely on what this vendor was telling us. It wasn't a situation where you have a restaurant, you can go in, observe their practices, maybe they're trying to change things up, but eventually they kind of fall back into their routine and you can get a good feel for things. Obviously, this was all verbal. The stand was not there anymore. And there was kind of these language barrier and cultural differences. Kind of as this outbreak investigation grew, it became public, the media was involved. She then got a lawyer and refused to talk to us except through her lawyer. And that's kind of when we stopped getting good information from her. Kind of in a normal restaurant investigation, you're trying to work with the restaurant, figure out what happened, stop those practices or whatever caused the outbreak, and hopefully allow them to continue to serve the public. In this instance, it was pretty clear kind of early on that she probably wasn't going to be getting any more permits to do any more festivals. So in conclusion, we had multiple food vehicles likely here. Basically, all the food items were contaminated, and that probably led to this very high attack rate. Really how we were hearing about cases was just through these hospital cases, these people that were showing up at the emergency room. So this likely really underestimates the number of cases that actually occurred. And they identified substantial cross-contamination and time temperature abuse of foods. So the only leftover food that didn't test positive for salmonella was the ceviche ingredients. And we had cases reporting consuming food from the vendor from noon to 10:30 p.m. that evening. And if you recall kind of some of the things she said about how her hot holding was working, the pork was just on a grill, that really doesn't add up. I suspect there was very little hot holding occurring during that entire time frame. So unfortunately, the original source of contamination was not identified, but we had a couple of clues. So several PFG patterns had been previously associated with pork. And then we had a couple of PFG patterns that were really rare in Minnesota, and really the only other time we had seen it was during a live animal market investigation that we had done the previous year. And during that investigation, we had gone out and done environmental swabs of a pig enclosure at this live animal market, and those had tested positive for that PFG pattern. So we kind of have the hypothesis that potentially that pork tripe could have been from the live animal market. We don't have a lot of places you can get pork tripe, so potentially that's where she got it. That was the introduction of salmonella, and then clearly, you know, had horrible food production practices that allowed for the cross contamination to occur, and then also the time temperature abuse that really increased the amount of salmonella present on the foods. So I'd just like to acknowledge kind of the participants in the investigation, Hennepin County, Minneapolis Environmental Health, our hospital that worked with us closely, and then MDA as well. And then funny story, so some of these PFG patterns were flagging kind of in CODA at this time, so we did have a multi-state call at the time, and it kind of just consisted of me kind of running through this outbreak investigation. But when I got back to my desk after the call was over, I had this email from Bill Keene, opened it up, and there's this picture of him eating a guinea pig, probably from the 80s. I can't remember if he said he enjoyed it or not, if it tasted very good, but yeah. So any questions?
Dr. Owens, CFO, Kentucky. Did you find, so if people were eating from 12 until 10:30 that night, there must have been a lot of folks that didn't get sick that you didn't know about, right? Or was it a consistent, I'm not saying it was difficult, I'm sure you controlled very easily, but I'm curious, did you find more and more cases as the day progressed and the temperature abuse happened, or were most of the people spread out throughout the day?
It seemed to be fairly spread out, but I think one of the challenges was, like, you know, not a lot of people were at the festival early on, and it might have been more of an issue with when people were showing up. But yeah, you know, we tried really hard to find some non-ill controls. I like to do case control studies, and just, you know, no family members. You know, we found some non-ill controls, but they were ones who did not eat from that vendor at all, basically. So yeah, it was challenging in that sense.
Hi, Alan McEshing from the Utah Department of Health, and really nice, fun presentation. So what is the training that people like that, food vendors, get, and, you know, what is a licensing requirement? You know, we just went through this issue that we're kind of worried about where, you know, if you're a volunteer, like a church or something, they are not going to require them to get training anymore, but you see something like this, you go like, yeah, that's not such a great idea.
Right.
So I just wondered what Minnesota has as well.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm actually, I can't recall if she had any food safety training at all. I suspect not, given the outcome. But she had to go through this permitting process kind of with the city, and they were looking at the food she was going to prepare. But I don't think that actually covered any food safety issues. You know, another thing is the sanitarians or the inspectors, you know, were never out at the festival. This was on the weekend, kind of when they're not working. So I know a lot of our local environmental health people kind of after this outbreak were wanting to be, you know, more present at these festivals, making sure they had a really good sense of what was going on. We have the same issue with the church ladies. We've kind of developed a video, or our environmental health people developed a video that they are supposed to watch. So they don't, I don't know if it's a required training. I think it might be now, but it's a little more informal as opposed to a formal training.
I have a question. On the longer incubation period, I think it's about 96 hours, were those possibly household contacts of ill individuals also, or how did they figure in the...
Yeah, you know, I can't recall off the top of my head if they had other ill people in the household, but certainly that's plausible. You know, the other potential would be that they consumed less of the food, or the food that they consumed had a lower level of contamination, which kind of led to the longer incubation period. But yeah, that's a good question.